First I was a Catholic girl, loved the mass, I watched the swirl of smoke from candles burning while Mary looked.
Hello and welcome to the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour on WOZO Radio 103.9 LPFM right here in Knoxville, Tennessee. We're recording this on Sunday morning, November 14th, 2021. I'm Larry Rhodes, or Doubter 5, and as usual we have our co-host Wombat on the line with us. Hello, Wombat.
I need B batteries. No, I don't have a stutter. B batteries.
B batteries. Okay, cool. Welcome to the show. Also, we have guests, George Brown, the 2.5. How are you? Originally from Brooklyn.
I remember what B batteries were because I bought one once.
I don't remember.
They were used in portable radios. You had a power... the plates of the tubes with a B battery. They
were very expensive. One.
Yes, it was a big one. And boy, I saved my allowance for like 6 weeks at least to buy it.
Oh, wow. Now you can't find them anywhere. No. Dread Pirate.
No, of course.
All the way from
ahoy.
Canada.
Ahoy.
And the John Richards from across the pond in Britain. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you.
Digital Free Thought Radio Hour is a talk radio show about atheism, free thought, rational thought, humanism, and the sciences. And conversely, we'll also talk about religions, religious faiths, gods, holy books, and superstition. And if you think you're the only non-believer in town, well, you're just not. There are hundreds, literally 1,000 at least, in Knoxville, and we have a group for you. We'll tell you how you can reach that group, maybe join later on in the show. But right now, Wombat, what are we going to talk about today?
We're going to be talking about the structure of the universe. Why not? Because.
Why, sure, because we can.
Yeah. Why not? Also, before we get into the meat, real meat and potatoes of it, we're going to throw it up to our own Dread Pirate Higgs for our weekly invocation.
All right. I'm going to change this out a little bit. Our one creator, which flies and is spaghetti and a monster. I believe thou art the creator of goodness and nourishment and of sustenance. I thank the pasta and the sauce and the meatballs, for they provide me all my needs. I thank thee for the many beverages that thou provides, for they engender true fellowship, and I will quaff them heartily, be they beer or wine or sweet iced tea or even milk or Kool-Aid, for it is not good to withhold fluids, and I need to take care of my body as beneficiary of thy holy goodness. I thank thee for the giving of the healthy green salad, the yummy garlic bread, and the blessed cheese for the top of my spaghetti. And also I am most thankful that if I eat all my dinner, a dessert of extreme chocolatiness will surely follow, preferably dark chocolate, for it is good. I believe that thou art neither male nor female, but are instead beyond the reaches of gender confusion of man and womankind. Yea, thou art ageless, timeless, and all-encompassing. I most humbly thank thee, O newly appendaged one, for touching me with the mental capacity to adapt the mythologies of this universe to aid and comfort me here, until the day that I am able to join together with my Pastafarian brothers and sisters at the foot of the beer volcano and enumerate my specifications of the stripper factory so that happiness and contentedness and good cheer be present for all. Forever and ever.
Amen, guys. Listen, B batteries are hard to find. You want to know why? Because it's too many A batteries taking up too many slots. You started with A, you think B, C, D. It's like, no, A, then double A, then triple A. It's like, calm down, A batteries. Make room for all the other batteries. What are you doing? It's crazy. There's no structure. So speaking of structure, Dredd, I heard you wanted to talk about structure of the universe today.
Well, in so many terms, I guess. So the anthropic principle, I don't know if you guys have had a look at it to see what it's all about, but It was proposed by this fellow called named Brandon Carter in 1973, which so happened to be the 500th anniversary of Copernicus.
Okay.
And so essentially, and unfortunately, the anthropic principle is probably misnamed, but it's been abused, of course, by all kinds of persons with religious bents in order to justify their positions that an intelligent designer had to be the essentially the creator of the universe. But I'll give you the weak anthropic principle, and it's: we must be prepared to take account of the fact that our location in the universe is necessarily privileged to the extent of being compatible with our existence as observers.
Right. Like, you have to respect that if you're in a puddle-shaped hole and you're a puddle in it,
yes,
things are pretty complementary with each other. Totally
that's
fine.
Right.
The way
right.
how I understood anthropic principle was we're in a universe that's heading towards disorder. Just entropically speaking, things are moving towards disorder, which meant we had to come from a place of order. So you can see some order in the universe, right? And we have to recognize that in order for us to recognize that we're moving to a state of disorder. And I've heard religious people, you know, flip that on its head and be like, well, therefore God. It's like, no. That's not what we're saying. We're just saying we have to start from somewhere to get towards disorder, which is where entropy is moving towards. Like, mm-hmm. we can measure that. And entropy, I guess, is what I'm hearing. Boudreaux, go for it.
Yeah, no, I'm wondering, is this a coincidence or are we confusing terms here? Anthropic is the term Dread Pirate's talking about, which is with an A, and it's like a human in nature,
yes.
right?
Yep.
Anthropomorphic.
Okay. I have literally heard of entropy.
Entropic yes. Process. That is the condition of the universe, is the second law of thermodynamics.
Then I'll back off. I'll take my science hat and put it away. Thank you, Boudreaux. Thank you, Dredd. So anthropic principle just is what in the most layman's terms possible?
Well, it's the idea that in order for us to observe the universe must have conditions which allow for life to exist. Some people have changed that to say the universe must have conditions for intelligent life to exist, and therefore it's a post hoc ergo propter hoc fallacy. So people have put the horse before the cart in order to justify a religious belief.
Yeah, and to be honest with you, I don't have a problem with the anthropic principle whatsoever. It seems like that makes total sense, but it doesn't answer any of the astounding questions that a Christian or a religious person would use to support their God belief, because it doesn't represent anything supernatural or necessitate any sort of explanation about how a God is a necessary construct in a universe where we still can't observe him or her or anything like that.
Well, a very interesting thing, and people, of course, ask why have an anthropic principle in the first place if it's really just a truism. And it actually, some fruit came of this principle in the form of Steven Weinberg's prediction of the energy level of a vacuum. And there were calculations made of what that value might be, which were really, really quite high. And then Steven Weinberg said, well, the fact that we exist means that there's a limit on what that energy level could be. And it was later found out, you know, 15 years later, that when with the discovery of dark energy, that in fact, it was within the limits that he said were necessary based on the anthropic principle. It was really cool. Really cool.
John, I'll throw this out at you. What do you think about the necropic principle? Like Stretz saying, like dead bodies coming back to life and taking over everybody.
Well,
that was a couple of weeks ago, wasn't it? Halloween.
Well, one dead, according to most of the people in Christianity.
No, there's two even in that book, Lazarus.
Yeah. Oh, there's a whole
like it's
bunch
not even a unique. Yeah. It's not if even a unique magic trick as far as Jesus is concerned.
The people that came up out of the grave, you know, during his crucifixion.
Yeah. Yeah, resurrection. I think they were wandering all over the place, weren't they?
Since, you know, this cart before the horse thing, was it fine-tuning, so that we would exist or we'd exist because it was fine-tuning? Oh, I think that since our planet is in, like, the Goldilocks zone, you know, between too hot and too cold, we're right there in the cold. I think God must be Goldilocks. I mean, all hail Goldilocks. I mean, following that example there.
And you know, I've heard about that Goldilocks zone idea. The thing is, that shifts as the sun gets older or younger, right? Mm-hmm. And so, like, what if anything, what's really scary or what's really interesting, I wouldn't say scary, would be really fascinating, is if we did see signs of life on Mars, if we were able to observe that to the extent where we can actually see, these are the building blocks necessary to make life. This is water flowing, but it's all dead now because that Goldilocks zone shifted away. And you're like, oh, well, then what we are looking at right now at our solar system is just a snapshot of where life could have been. And we're just in that magical zone of where life could be, and it's shifting away. Yeah. And if we don't, if we didn't need another timeline to get our acts together and be like, once this shifts out of the way, Earth is done. And we have to figure out another place where, you know, if we're going to survive.
Yeah. Actually, the prediction is that in a billion years, the sun, because it is increasing in output, that in a billion years, the Earth will be completely uninhabitable.
Larry.
Start packing.
Can't hear you, my friend. Larry.
Sorry. They say that within 5 billion years, the sun will have swollen so far that the Earth, the orbit of the Earth will be inside the sun.
Yeah.
So that means that the Goldilocks zone may very well shift all the way out to like Jupiter, and its moons may be the inhabited areas.
Or it could mean that Suntan City will finally release some coupons finally, because you can't ever find anything on Groupon for them.
Yeah. How many moons do you think Jupiter has right now?
I don't know.
36.
70 something.
Get out.
No, and Saturn has about as many. So there's huge amount of moons out there.
They're in a little show off with each other. You know, that's what happens when one person gets a robot back. The other person has to get a robot back. And next, you know, they're just competing with each other.
Well, maybe Neil deGrasse Tyson will do a thing like he did with Pluto and just declare them non-moons or mini moons or something like that.
Oh, that'll make me upset. Keep our moons the way they were.
Jupiter keep the solar system great. 79 moons.
John, what's up?
Well, I don't really see that there's anything to discuss here, because it's a truism that we exist. Maybe we're not in a position to deduce how things were before we existed.
Yeah.
And maybe if things were different, then perhaps we wouldn't exist as Homo sapiens, but some other intelligent creature may have come to exist. And who knows? And if you plot this forwards, I mean, what would we be saying about the anthropic principle if the sun had just engulfed the Earth? That doesn't sound very anthropic to me.
The issue is like, it's a slippery slope that works both ways. And in the same sense that a Christian can try to mangle that into a way to prove that a God exists, in a much more fundamental notion, the tools that we are using to observe the universe are the same ones that we're using that we apply to science, and are just as verifiable as the ones that we use to come up with basic observations about how the universe works in the first place, to even come up with that principle. And none of those systems point towards a supernatural being in control of everything. Mm-hmm. And I think the main takeaway is the fundamental truth is the veracity of, hey, I have to be able to observe the universe and the universe has to be observable. True. What are we seeing? I don't see a God. I don't see angels. I don't see heaven. I don't see devils and stuff like that. Jinns, spirits, fairies. What am I seeing? Okay, what's the best way to see it? And it's always going to be science at the end of the day in terms of the best way to know and see things. Dredd, what's up?
Well, I was just going to say the reason I wanted to talk about it at all was that it is an argument that those of religious faiths use to justify their position, and can often come up in conversations that you're having with someone about this, if they're, even moderately scientifically literate, you know, it's a good argument to know about in order to defend against it, so that you know, you can point out the fact that, you know, someone says, well, there must be a God, because how else do you explain the fine tuning? Well, fine tuning, you know, is just blown out of the water when you actually examine the anthropic principle as it was developed, and not as how it was misrepresented and misinterpreted.
Yeah. And my takeaway from that is, if anyone says, well, of course it's this, because how else could you explain that? I say, never take the bait and start arguing about that, because they're not right by default. So force them to take the burden of evidence to say, yes, well, exactly, how does this being unsatisfactory make this true? Explain that link to me, and then I'll follow along. But exactly, I'm not here to defend or attack any of the things that you find ludicrous. That's up to you to figure out. Draw me the connection from your conclusion to your belief.
Yes,
but
yes,
yeah.
Yeah.
What's up, Bujo? Sorry.
I really like your opening response to this, the puddle, you know, the idea if there's a hole in some crazy shape and the water fills it, you know, the water could be like, I perfectly fill this hole. It's amazing. Mm-hmm, it's mm-hmm. Like, well, yeah, you fill it because, you know, that's the shape of it. So the fine tuning to me is, it just comes out of, well, all of the existence of life that tried to occur but died off because it couldn't, well, it wasn't tuned for them, so they never got to observe it.
Yeah. I was invited to speak on the Voice of Islam radio station just over a week ago. And one of the questions that they asked me was, what is the atheist explanation for the origin of the universe and life and everything? Oh, and no. I have to point out that being an atheist is simply not being convinced by the belief systems of assorted believers. It's not a specialist knowledge about the origin of the universe.
Right.
You can't expect somebody, as a result of their atheism, to be able to answer mysteries that scientists can't solve. So, but this is a strange thing. They have come to a result. They have got an explanation for the origin of everything, but they don't have any evidence for it, and that doesn't seem to bother them.
Yeah. I mean, I gotta say, it's one of the most frustrating things, but also the most telling thing, that most people who are religious know what an atheist is from other religious people. And yes, so the one of the best things about being an atheist is being open about your atheism, so that people know who to talk to when it comes to getting good information. Because I can't tell you the number of times I've told someone I'm an atheist, and then I have to immediately dismantle what their impression of what an atheist is given to them, either by their pastor or by a loved one who was religious. And say, no, Larry eats babies, but I don't. Larry, what's up?
That's true Scotsman's fallacy. Yeah. No, it really doesn't matter what we say. I mean, created the universe. We could say it was pixies. We could say the universe creating pixies created it. And then they would laugh at it and say it's silly, and it would be silly. But the thing about it is they demand all this evidence and reason from atheists about the creation of the universe, but they don't demand any evidence or reason for their own explanation that their priests, mm-hmm. preachers, imams, et cetera, give them. There is no evidence at all given to them, as long as they believe, they feel like they're in like Flint.
Yeah.
Hey, what's up, Dred?
I was just going to say, and that, you know, really is the basis of Pastafarianism, is that it really serves as good an explanation for the creation of the universe as any God at any time ever did. And so while people may, you know, point at us and say, well, we're just out there to make fun of everyone. No, we just make fun of ourselves. And the fact that it's as good an explanation as any, and we're just not that invested in it as other people are in their own gods. So there you go. Rahman.
Yeah. So I'm also going to throw this one out too. I like this as my snarky retort, but when someone tells me, you know, like atheists, they don't believe in anything. It's like, I'm just saying I don't believe you.
Yeah.
That's the only thing I don't believe. All right. So we had a whole list of other topics that we're going to want to go through today, all brought to us by our own John Richards. John Richards, do you have that short list? You want me to prompt you a little bit?
This is prompted by a conversation that I had. It was an original post in the Facebook group Unbelievable. Ooh. Question mark. And it was on about if we had some other God, would we feel the need to glorify him? And my comment was, why? What is this need to glorify? I mean, are you congenitally subservient? Yeah. Why do you want to worship anything or anybody? And are you lacking in self-esteem? And of course,
all the questions at once.
They're all related, because it occurred to me that one of the things that religions do when they're bringing up, when they're inducting their children into their faith, is they destroy their self-esteem. So that then you've got to look up to the authority, whether it's a parent or priest or an imam or whoever, and believe them and accept their authority. And then the hierarchy goes right up to him in the sky.
Where are you getting this from? All Christians do is teach your kids to be absolutely blindly subservient. Sing songs about how they're the sheep and the other people are the shepherd, and be recognized that they're sinners and there's something fundamentally wrong with them that only God can solve. How does that affect their self-esteem?
Well, I just don't know.
It's a mystery. It's one of God works in mysteries, by the way. Dred, did you want to?
Yeah. Ask? Well, you know, just speaking to John's comments there, you know, of course, back in, you know, Roman and Greek times and Babylonians and all the rest of them, the gods were much more human-like. They were, you know, fickle and, you know, had a lot of, they suffered the vicissitudes of, the divine sort of thing, I guess, but they were much more human. And, more recent elevation of a divine entity into a single thing is authoritarian and totalitarian, as opposed to, you know, the gods of those other civilizations, which were much more interactive. You could be a servant to Venus, or you could be a servant to Aphrodite or Zeus. You didn't have to buy into all of it.
Sure. You know, it's an interesting thing, because I actually find solo gods or monotheistic religions to be almost a better representation of humanity in long form structure. Because if I were to ask an absolute narcissist to write a book about how awesome he was or how awesome she was, it probably looked like the Bible. Right. It probably looked exactly like the Bible. It's like, well, I just made 10 rules. I made some mistakes, but it was their fault. And I killed everything. And then I started up again. And then I said, don't you dare think about banging my wife.
I'll make rules that say you don't think again.
One third of the 10 rules you're not supposed to do. And I'm just like, oh, this guy is crazy. It's like, and then at the end, there's going to be a giant war and everything's going to be awesome. It's going to be amazing. It'll be tremendous, terrific. I guarantee it. It's going to be amazing. Don't take your vaccines. And slavery is okay. I mean, like, that is humanity in a sense. The true mirror in my head. But when I see the pantheon of gods, yeah, there's a lot of bickering and a lot of like siding, and you can pick your favorite ones to go with. I definitely see that too. Larry, what's up?
I was just going to say, it sounds like Narcissus wrote it himself, because he was writing about himself,
right?
But it was actually written by the priests who were trying to push belief in that person. So it's like, your best friend is a mafia boss. You know, you better do what I say, or my friend will kick your butt. You know, you know, he's awesome. Let me tell you all the things he can do, but he's my best friend. And
it's like, my dad would kick your dad's butt.
Yeah.
You know, at the end of the day, it's like that story with the emperor's new clothes. It's essentially two guys walk in and they're like, hey, you must be stupid. or else you'd be able to see this fabric, because only smart people can see this fabric. Yeah. And the guy's like, I guess I got to see the fabric too. Yeah, put them on. And they're just literally selling him false hope, false clothes, all this stuff. False sense of confidence. And he's just walking down the streets naked, but everyone can't laugh at him because then they'll act as if they're stupid too. And it's only the innocence of a child with a true untainted skepticism, without being indoctrinated into like one sort of confidence system or the next, to be honestly laughing at the guy. But in the actual story, the kid doesn't exist. The story just ends with the whole town being subservient to these two, you know, con artists in a sense. And I'm like, when you see a story like that, how do you not automatically see the religious applications behind it? But yet there are a lot of Christians who have like complete cognitive dissonance on that concept. Truman Show as well, Jim Carrey, a wonderful example of like, how could you not see the allegory here? Like, it's so bizarrely obvious. Like, the director's name was Christian. It's crazy. Anyway, Larry, I think we're at the bottom of the half of the show.
We are. Hey, this has been the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour, first half anyway. And we're going to take a break for a short minute here, and we'll be right back after this. See you then.
Just old stories that we wrote when we were scared. Like a parent comforts children and consoles them when they're sad. But every child that grows up comes to understand. We gotta let go of fairy tales or stay buried in the sand. Well, you tell the gentle child that they were born of sin, but they must love their maker while always fearing him. And just because your parents' parents told you it's all true, now you tell your children's children to be a Christian too. Well, open up your eyes. Well, open up your eyes. Well, open up your eyes and let your mind be free. Well, open up your eyes. Well, open up your eyes. Well, open up your eyes and let yourself be free. Now you have the Lord inside you to guide you through this life. He alone commands you, and he alone's your life. You spend your life denying that his words just don't make sense. You're making sane excuses as you come to his defense. Well, they say that we all need him, or we'll won't know what to do. Because we wrote the Bible, well, you know this can't be true. Religion's for the masses, yeah, to keep the folks in line. And with it I control you, I can even read your mind. Well, open up your eyes. Well, open up your eyes. Well, open up your eyes and let your mind be free. Well, open up your eyes. Well, open up your eyes. Well, open up your eyes and let yourself be free. Well, a good man's good, a bad man's bad, and it's always been a choice. But to get good men to do bad things, and God, they must rejoice. Millennia of killing, it's commanded by our Lord. The righteousness of bloodshed, it's a wave of Jesus' song. So you say that I'm unholy, and against me hold a grudge. You're full of contradictions, cause it's only God that judges. You say my faith excludes me from that which lie above. But if I am the wretched, tell me why do I have love? Well, open up your eyes. Well, open up your eyes. Well, open up your eyes. And let your mind be free. Well, open up your eyes. Well, open up your eyes. Well, open up your eyes. And let yourself be free. Lives to do his will, but that would make you evil, cause you're the one who kills. You use God when it's convenient and on days as benefit. Religion's taught me one thing, it's how to be a hypocrite. Well, open up your eyes. Well, open up your eyes. Well, open up your eyes and let yourself be free.
Hello, and welcome back to the second half of the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour. I'm Doubter 5, and we're on WOZO Radio 103.9 LP FM right here in Knoxville, Tennessee. Now let's talk about the Atheist Society of Knoxville, or ASK, which was founded in 2002. We're in our 19th year. Next year will be the big one. ASK has over 1,000 members, and we have weekly in-person meetings at Knoxville's Old City at the Barley's Tap Room and Pizzeria. Look for us out on the patio. If you'd like to join our Tuesday evening Zoom meeting, however, email us at askanatheist@knoxvilleatheist.org or letschatse@gmail.com. You can find us online at Facebook, meetup.com, or at knoxvilleatheist.org, or just Google Knoxville Atheists. You'll find us. By the way, if you don't live in Knoxville, you should still go to Meetup and do a search for an atheist group in your town. Don't find one. Start one.
Start one.
That's right. Where do you want to pick up, Wombat?
Hey, we're going to throw it up to our own Boudreaux, who's going to give us a rundown on marketing 101 strategy.
Yes, I'm gonna. I think maybe what I'd love to do is share a marketing tool campaign that a local mega church here in Lexington has been using. And if anyone watching our live streams from this area, they might have seen this and may have even wondered what it was. But so many of you are familiar with the if any runners out there, if you've run a half marathon or a marathon, you get a white oval sticker and you put it on your car, right? Seen that?
Yeah.
26.2, you put the sticker on, and you know that means you're basically telling everyone that's reading the sticker that, yes, I have run this distance. You know, I'm proud of it. It was a big effort, and you know, I've got a 13.1 in my car. I'm super proud of. Haven't made a marathon yet, but that's just, you know, well. The megachurch here in town has a sticker just like that, except it says 27.2.
Oh, no.
Because they want to go the extra mile, right?
No! So,
yeah. It's a mile longer than 26.2. And with the exception of a little bit of writing underneath the number, the number is big enough to read from a driver's seat behind them, but you can't read the little fine print that says, you know, the name of the church. And just looking on the website, it looks like what they're basically doing is like, hey, put this sticker on your car and it signifies that you're going the extra mile. And to me, what it signifies is that whether you've run a marathon or not, you're putting on the sticker. And surely you're fooling some people into thinking you've run a marathon, which seems to be terribly dishonest.
Until they get out of the car and you're like, no.
Yeah. So I don't know. Reaction. That's all I want to say about it. I'm really curious what people think.
So a while back ago, I had a conversation with a guy when I was doing SE in Kentucky. And in Kentucky was one of the best places I ever did street epistemology or Socratic examination interviews at. And the conversation that was at hand was, can people who don't skateboard wear skateboard t-shirts? Hmm. And I had a very fascinating discussion with this guy because he was an older person, but had grown up in the culture of skateboarding and had a proud skateboard shirt on. And he's like, I don't think people would skateboard. I was like, well, you look kind of old. Like, well, I'm not old because I have this. And because I did this, and he gave me the whole explanation. And so I'm thinking, like, is it worth the, how do I put this? Is it worth getting upset if someone needs to even lie to themselves in a sense to look good, and or is it better off to just know what you're good at, what you're capable of, and whether you choose to represent it or not, be happy with that. But I feel like that is the human condition, because just because someone else says I ran a marathon and they didn't, just say they bought a car that had the sticker on it and they didn't want to take it off. Like, I can find that being really upsetting to people who routinely do Ironmans and stuff like that. It'd be like, take that sticker off. You don't deserve it. It's like, does this really bother you? Who's the victim here? Like, is this really false valor, or is there something else going on here? And is that a human condition thing? And can it be applied to religion? Absolutely. How many people have I seen wearing crosses on their, you know, chest with necklaces and doing horrendous things in mugshots or like stuff like that? So where are we going to draw the line? I say it may not even be worth it. That's my two cents. Dredd, but, sounds like you want to weigh on this?
No, I'm good.
John Richards, what's up?
Well, a couple of things here. First of all, I think, like most advertising, is an attempt to deceive.
Yeah, I started to say, I mean, they're in the business of false advertising, aren't
exactly.
they?
Exactly.
Okay, I'm gonna. Is it advertising? Exist. Yeah. Is it advertising or is it makeup at a certain point? Like, is it a cosmetic enhancement that they're doing to just look a little bit better in public? And is makeup advertising? And is that deceiving? I don't know. But
well, what's the purpose of it? What's the purpose of putting the sticker on your car?
It's signaling.
Yes.
So it's like waving the flag and saying, oh, look at me. I am so patriotic. Yes. I am more patriotic than you are.
Yeah. It's hand waving.
So I love America so much. I put an American flag next to my Confederate flag on the same bumper sticker.
that was going to be my next point, because it's braggadocio, isn't it?
Mm.
And you don't see it. You don't see bumper stickers much. And I can't remember when I last saw a bumper sticker in the UK, because people aren't interested in letting the rest of the world know their achievements. It's an American thing.
Well, that's mind blowing. I thought that was everywhere, but now I know.
The other thing that we don't do is attach large plastic scrotums dangling from the bottom of
in his own right. Well, bragging that he's not bragging.
Where do you buy the plastic scrotum?
Well, I've seen them.
I don't brag. Let me explain to you how good of a non-bragger I am. And our whole country doesn't do this. We're amazing non-braggers. Everyone here is the best non-bragging person possible. It's amazing. We're all very humble over here. We're the most humble.
Larry, Ty, I like your response.
This is my house. This is my house here.
Eric,
Ty, I really like your response, and it really makes me think, why is this bothering me so much? And I want to kind of put that aside, because, you know, I think, you know, people who run kind of react to it maybe differently than people that don't. Sure. I think where I would really more interested in is like the boardroom that came up with this idea and pitched it, just again, forgetting if whether or not they put it on their car or not, the church is asking people to. It really seems deceitful. I mean, if they would have picked a different color or a different shape and just kind of mirrored the running culture, I'd get that. But I mean, it is exactly the same shape, color. It's got the black oval, everything. Oh, yeah. Why didn't they just do a plus one?
Yeah, it's an attack. It feels, in my head, it's the exact same thing religion has done to science, where when something works really well in science and it looks really good, religion's mm-hmm. like, we should do a thing like that. Let's just do that. Now it's our thing. Mm-hmm. If we do this enough time, it'll effectively be a religious thing and not a God thing. Like chariots used to be the way you get from point A to point B. And then religion's like, we're going to make some songs about chariots. It's going to be us. So like, next thing you know, you got, oh, chariot. And now it's a religious word. And I can't put it in my songs now. It's like, no, I'm going to make songs that deliberately have only Christian terms in it. Because I'm an atheist and I want to take it back. That's my own little thing. But I'm saying, like, lords used to be landowners. Now it's, oh, Lord, who are our fathers? Like, no, that used to be a job, a profession for a dude. That used to be, unfortunately, it used to be a man who owned land. And, that's it. What's up,
and Tom? In that time, you had to worship him too.
Yeah, more or less, you had to give him money and tithes and stuff like that. But it just translated into a religious thing. And I feel like culturally, that's what religion wants to do. They want to monopolize that stuff. Larry, what's up?
I was just going to say that religion is in the business of hijacking other good ideas. Like they hijack your history. I mean, if you join a religion, you end up spending all your time studying the history of the Jewish people, say, or they hijack your family. You know, it's not, if they don't believe in Jesus, then you come into our church and you call the priest father, you call the nuns sister. They hijack their holidays, you know, the solstices. They hijack marriage. They didn't even care about marriage up until around 1500. Then they started saying, we have to ordain a minister to marry you. And then they took over morality. It's just one thing after another.
They're
all
taking way
down
over
the
vaccines.
Line.
They're trying to make that a thing that we choose to do or not do. And you're right.
So
religion hijacks other good ideas, because when's the last time religion's come out with a good idea, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's been thousands of years and we still haven't had anything reasonable, good.
We'll see that in
argumentation. Come out of religion.
When we're online arguing our position against theirs, it's not long before they start using our position, turn it around and use it as theirs. Like, what proof do you have that there's no God? You know, that type of thing. When we were asking the logical question, you know, when they say our God is real and he's all powerful and you have to follow him, we say, well, what proof do you have that he's real? Well, they'll, you know, 10 minutes later, they've used that, you know, what proof do you have that he doesn't? Like, it counters that.
Mm-hmm.
And they know that you can't prove a negative, so they use it anyway. I mean,
George,
particularly.
No, I just the word co-opted just came to mind. What do you think of that?
I have met people who are doctors, but in Bible studies, like they went to Bible studies and they just kept going and they got really good at the Bible studies and the stories, and they went to like a church. They went to a university that was owned by a church, and the church gave them a doctorate degree, and they put doctor in front of their names, and and I'm just like, when I see that, and it's like, I will call you doctor, whatever you are, I'll do it. But in my head, I know that's not a real degree. Like, I know you're not making anything useful. Mm-hmm. You're not building anything useful. In fact, you might be doing things detrimental. What's up, Dredd?
Well, I was going to say that the term physician is actually a protected term. And that way, you know, say a chiropractor cannot call himself a physician. He may call himself a doctor. A doctor of homeopathy might call themselves a doctor, but they're not physicians. And, you know, that's an important point that people need to realize when they're looking for healthcare, is if, are you looking for a physician or are you looking for pseudoscience?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because anyone can be a doctor.
John. And there's these diploma mills that are out there, like Liberty University, that just handing them out online. And people, what's his name? That guy who says, calls himself the Dino Doctor, Kent Hovind. You know, he's been going himself a science doctor because he got a doctorate from this Liberty University diploma mill. And he's not a doctor of science, but he uses that term every day.
Yeah.
I'm a doctor of pastology. that's my proof right there.
Your third eye.
My third eye. My past second eye. Noodle. My third noodle.
Don't get graphic. All right. John Richards, what's up?
Yeah, I've got a couple of things to bring to this because there was a bit of a scandal over here some years ago when we had Dr. Gillian McKeith, who had a long-running series on, I think it was Channel 4, where she professed to be able to help people, and she had a different victim each week, to lose weight. And there was a diet involved, and it also involved analyzing the person's excreta. So this had a sort of pseudo medical sign to it, but then it was revealed that she'd bought her doctorate, and this was revealed by what's his name, Gold, I can't remember the Goldfarb or Goldstein, one of the researchers in, I think, Cambridge University, who was looking into this, and he actually found out where she got her doctorate from, and he bought one for his cat.
Yeah. Nice.
That's a great way to prove a point.
We have $100. Great point. Because anyone could be a doctor. Oh, go for it, George. Go for it.
A couple of thoughts came to my mind. Give me a minute here. There's a fellow who does an internet radio program. It's long running. It's been on for about 20 years.
You're talking about us, Larry?
Yeah.
No, this is called Head On Radio, and it's on weekdays every day. And the fellow's name is Bob Kincaid, who runs it. It's a long form talk format. And he was trained for the ministry, and he likes to use the term the religion industry. And to me, I like the term because it puts it in a business context. Oops. The second item that really I'd like to share with the rest of you, this one's pretty funny. I have a friend who is what I call a transmitter engineer. These people are very rare. This is a person who's capable of going into a radio station and doing surgery on a radio station. So he has worked for a syndicate of about 22 stations here in the South. And a couple of these stations that are part of the syndicate carry ministers, you know, and it's a format where they carry ministers like every half hour, every hour on Sunday, for instance. And these guys just get on and make pitches to their flock. And of course, they make pitches for money. And the problem that the syndicate has with these guys is that very often they don't pay their bills. And they have to take them to court and tell them how many gold Cadillacs these guys are driving and why they're not paying their bills. The pastors cry poor mouth to the judge, and it's very funny. So they demand that these guys pay up front for their airtime.
So
because they've got stiff too much.
To top off what George is saying and to get back also to what Boudreaux was asking, like, posers are inherently annoying, though if anything, they're only embarrassing themselves to those who are already in the know. And I find that to be the justice enough, because other people don't care what sticker you have on the back of your car. And like the people who don't run, they won't know the difference between 26.2 and 48.6 or whatever. It's like, is that a Bible verse? I don't know what's going on. I don't know what's going on. But the runners who do run will see that and be like, that guy is an idiot. The people with the starkest on the car, that's the 27.2, will be like, I'm a good person. So like in the end of the day, isn't everybody like all right? Like they're getting the justice from the people who know, and on their own right, they're happy and no one's getting hurt. So I'm like, seems like they're perpetrating their own poserness, and that's fine. Annoying still, but also fine. Dredd, what's up?
I was just thinking about a person I used to know who was a notorious drunk driver. And he was of the mind that the sticker that, you know, Mad Mothers Against Drunk Driving, that he put one on the back of his car, believing that the cops would see that and think that he was a non-drunk driver. And you know what I mean? So signaling that he was a sober driver, when in fact he just used it as a tool to what he
and he's weaving all the over the road, right?
Exactly.
So go on ahead and wear the t-shirts, go on ahead and put your car, do what you want, but just know that you're doing it in a community of varying levels of it, of awareness of what you're doing.
Right.
And so you might fool yourself, but you won't fool everybody. And that's one of the consequences with working with a society. And that's its own justice in its own right. Guys, how about it? I think we're at the end of the show. I think we had a pretty good discussion. That was a really great jumping off point, Eric. Do you have anything that you'd like to recommend that we check out before next week, my friend?
And I don't. I've been pretty quiet here the last couple of weeks, and I'm glad to be back on the show. So.
Okay. Yep. Okay. Okay.
Boudreaux,
okay.
Your name sounds like you should be from Louisiana, but you're in the UK, right?
No, he's not in the UK. He's in Kentucky.
Kentucky. I thought you were. I've got it down here in my notes.
No. I work at UK University of Kentucky.
Oh. That explains it, Lucy.
That's hilarious.
Yeah. Anyway, I need to apologize. I didn't include you on the intro, but there's Boudreaux, that's all the way from
UK, you're actually Kentucky. Away, Boudreaux. It's very, very European.
That's awesome. That is blatant misrepresentation.
And I love his English accent. He's just spot on.
Yeah.
All right. So can we touch back on that subject? Because I think that's interesting. Boudreaux, I think sometimes we could be posing without realizing it, because you, I'm sure, have a shirt that says UK on it, right?
Oh, yeah.
That if you went to where John Richards lives at, he'd be like, why the hell do you have a shirt with my country's icon? It's like, no, this is my thing, and it's this whole thing from the school that I come to from. It's like, that's our letters. Like, at that point, it wouldn't make sense for John to get angry, right? Because, like, he knows what country he's from, and he knows that whatever mindset you have for contextualizing those two letters is totally fine. So he's going to let you be happy. He's going to do his own thing. And I feel like that's how we should just treat those stickers. Know only, where they're from.
Yeah.
And don't get upset about them, but know where they're from and be able to call
I guess
them.
My only complaint with that is if I go to the UK wearing UK, it's not like I'm getting credit for something there. I mean, maybe I can get a deal on a beer and a pub,
you need to have a sticker on your shirt when you go to the UK.
Yeah, I changed my notes to U of K now. So
I just feel like it's numbing the effect of the sticker now. It's like if anyone can just put on the sticker, I feel like, well, there we go. Now we have to come up with a whole new system.
There goes the neighborhood, right?
They just peed in the Cheerios. So,
yeah. Dredd, is there anything that you would recommend we check out before next
week? Yeah, sure. Well, you can check out my YouTube channel where I live stream this on Sundays at 8 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. Nice. Mind Pirate is spelled MindPyrate. And I'm up to 98 subscribers. Two more, my friends. Bring it on. Bring it on.
Let's do it. Let's do it. Let's do it. So let's see, John Richards, anything you'd recommend that we check out before the...
Yeah, sure. I'd like you to check out my Free Thought Productions YouTube channel. I'm really pleased with the latest Global Atheist News that went out last night, because it's got... we have a number of correspondents from different parts of the world. And so this includes our latest Islamic affairs correspondent, Nuria Khan. She does a bit. And including which, there is a clip from Harris Sultan's show in which he reveals that masturbation is now halal.
Is now what?
Halal?
Halal.
Is that forbidden?
No,
it's the Muslim equivalent of kosher. I don't know how to.
Yes, okay. It's acceptable. Halal is acceptable.
I see.
Yeah.
Allowable. Okay, I'll have to remember it that way.
Yes, that would be a good way.
Yeah, halalable.
That's a pop mute, guys. I have this weird thing I want to bring up, but we're going to throw it to George Brown. Do you have anything you'd recommend that we check out before next week, my friend?
I have nothing to recommend.
Okay, okay.
No new coffee brands?
No, I've given up coffee for the duration. I'm having a little bit of a digestive ailment right now, and sure. So I'm off coffee, and it's weird.
Mm. Nice, nice, nice.
More beer.
I think coffee is the weirdest, you know, psychonootropic, whatever you want to call it, that we've just contextualized as normal in society. Like when I see a 12-year-old talking about coffee, I'm like, I don't like, guys, this is weird. This is like,
well, do you remember the Pope having blessed one bean made all coffee good because it was so good that it had to be a sin. So yeah. He blessed one bean and it made all beans.
It reminds me of those really old episodes of I Love Lucy where Lucille Ball has baby Ricky in her hands and she's smoking a cigarette and blowing it smoke right in the baby's face. Right. It's like back then they didn't know. And I feel like we should know by now, but the coffee industry is like, don't tell them. It's like, we already know. It's like, well, we're not going to say anything if you're not going to say it. I'm saying things now. Yeah. There's my thing. Guys, ASL has, or American Sign Language, is working on new terms for atheists, humanists, secularists, and skeptic, because those words don't exist in ASL proper. A lot of the words in English don't exist in sign language, and a lot of sign language words don't exist in English. And so there's some mixing around trying to make the words compatible with each other. And I didn't like the sign for atheist before. It was not believe person. And I'm like, there's so much more to atheist than just a person who doesn't believe.
Sure.
Right now it's no beliefs or none beliefs. But like, I still feel like we're working on it. I think I like the A and circling it like with the American Atheist logo. I think that works really well. Of all the ones that are being proposed, that's my most favorite one so far. But I'm going to keep you guys updated. Maybe we can make it a show in the future. But Larry, what's up? Atheism, I don't know what it is. Tell me what it is. I must know. Hey, plug anything else you want, my friend. It's we're here for fun. Right. My cat's trash in a bag.
Atheism, I do have a book about that. It's called Atheism, What's It All About? It's available on Amazon. You can also go to digitalfreethought.com and learn about it there. There's a whole blog there with our radio show archives, atheist songs, and many articles on the subject. Thank you for joining, by the way, the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour. Remember, you can find this show at Apple, iTunes, Pocket Casts, Amazon, and on podcasts everywhere. Just check for the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour. If you have questions for the show, you can send them to us at askanatheist@knoxvilleatheist.org or letschatse@gmail.com, and we'll answer them in the future shows. If you're having trouble leaving religious beliefs behind, you can get help at recoveringfromreligion.org. They have people that can give you the aid you need. If you're watching this on YouTube, be sure to like and subscribe. Remember, everybody is going to somebody else's hell. The time to worry about is when they prove that heavens and hells and souls are real. Until then, don't sweat it. Enjoy your life, and we'll see you next week. Say bye, everybody.
Bye, everybody.
Bye, everybody.
Bye. Bye.